I have no need to ask you if this is true.
Excellent, Thomas. I told you that the Outlanders would sit there with, what was the old expression? Ah, yes, egg on their faces.
Ryan's mind was racing now, in full combat mode, examining and rejecting dozens of hypotheses and possible scenarios, trying to see how dangerous the information was, and how seriously compromised it might make them. But he couldn't see a major threat. Two men and a butler and a few zombie-like servants, no Sekhmen, and no sign of any weapons against them.
You are calculating whether we present any threat to you, Ryan. I can almost hear the wheels spinning inside your brain.
You backtracked us?
An intelligent guess. Partly true. I see no reason to tell you more than that. What greatly interests all of us is the extent to which you have mastered the controls. Where did you learn the secrets of Project Cerberus?
Upon my soul, how
Enough, Doc. Let me do the talking here.
Of course, my dear fellow. But scarcely anyone now living can have knowledge of Cerberus.
Or Kronos.
Or Over Project Whisper.
Or Enterprise Eternity.
No. I told you before that we do not mention that. Not to anyone.
It can't hurt.
Thomas and Elric stood, glowering at each other, their eyes seeming to glow like burning rubies.
No more, Elric. Leave us now.
You don't have the authority without the rest of the kindred.
Thomas sat and sipped from a goblet of a red wine so dark that it was almost purple, staining his lips.
Do it, Elric.
Elric stalked to the door without a word, jostling Norman out of his way, pausing in the entrance to the dining hall and spinning to face the company. He bowed low from the shadows, his black clothes making him almost invisible.
I was foolish. Thomas was correct. My mention of Enterprise Eternity was unwise.
Ryan knew that Doc wouldn't be able to resist asking the question.
Might I inquire about Enterprise Eternity? I am not familiar with it. Was it something that was being researched in the redoubt nearby?
It was. You failed to penetrate into the main part of the complex, did you not?
We did. You found the open door. That was the first time any of us had ever encountered the Mat-Trans unit. That was what the sign said it was called.
Indeed. Where did you make the jump from?
Jump?
What they called utilizing the gateways. How did you find yourself in the system?
By accident. You mind if we leave it at that? Just slammed the door in a hidden fortress, and that sort of triggered something. We all passed out, and when we came around, we were someplace else. You know how it works? Or how many there are of them? Be good to control something like that. Give a man real power.
It would, Ryan. We know much, but that is a secret that has escaped us.
While the conversation had been going on, the first course had been finished, and plates piled high with roast beef were brought in. Norman served the Lafitte, getting a nod of delighted approbation from Doc. Thomas had eaten nothing, contenting himself with sipping at his own wine glass. After the discussion about the gateways, he appeared to lose interest in the whole gathering, sitting with his snowy head slumped down on his chest, tapping at his goblet with the end of his forefinger. Like Elric, Thomas was dressed completely in black, with a shirt of satin and pants of velvet tucked into polished black knee boots. A slender golden chain encircled his neck, holding a medallion that looked to Christy like a silver ankh. Every now and again, Thomas would lift a hand to it, as though to reassure himself that it was still there. The last course was a choice between a steaming cherry cobbler and a pecan pie, with or without cream. Most of them chose helpings of both. Thomas still ate nothing. Mildred noticed that Thomas's hooded eyes kept turning to Jack, as though he were trying to work something out about the albino teenager.
Jack Lauren?
Yeah?
Your age?
16, going on 17.
You have always had that hair and those eyes?
Sure.
And you have lived only 16 years. And every year you grow older, do you, Jack?
Of course. Everyone does.
Indeed. My own words to myself, 100 times a day. Everyone does.
Thomas stood and walked slowly around the long table. He patted Jack on the shoulder and whispered something to Norman as he reached the door.
Tomorrow you will meet everyone, and I look forward to seeing your film, Johannes Ford.
He left the room.
How did he know about the film?
Ryan didn't know what had awakened him. After the meal, Norman had brought around tiny glasses with a choice of sweet, sticky liqueurs, bright rainbow colors, deep green and cerulean blue and violet and a sickly gold. All of them tasted of sugar and fire. Christy had described them to Ryan, who'd shaken his head at the idea. He'd eaten well, rather than wisely, and was feeling liverish. But she'd pressed him and picked one for him that she said was the color of ripe oranges. Norman had poured him a glassful, and it hadn't tasted bad, orangey with a hint of chocolate and a slightly bitter aftertaste that Ryan couldn't identify. But on principle, he'd left most of it, and Christy had finished it for him, without, she said, letting the butler see. They'd all gone up to their rooms. Both Ryan and Christy were exhausted and promptly fell asleep. Now, something had awakened him.
Christy? What was that?
But she didn't stir. Ryan nudged her in the ribs, but she half raised an arm to vaguely push him away.
Guess I'll just have to go and take a look-see myself. Or, listen here. Never heard of that. Well, maybe I just invented it.
His head ached, and he felt muzzy. Sitting up and swinging his legs out of the bed brought a passing wave of nausea, but it didn't last. Ryan slept with most of his clothes on, from force of habit, but he was barefooted as he padded carefully across the room, tucking the Sig Sauer into its holster as he moved, both hands outstretched to try to avoid bumping into the furniture. Ryan was pleased that he made the walk to the door without even touching anything, his right hand dropping onto the cold metal of the ornate brass handle at the first attempt. He hesitated. The Cornelius Mansion was generally in poor condition, but every door hinge and lock had been recently greased. It was an interesting fact to store away and examine later. He still had no idea what had awakened him, but the short hairs at his nape were prickling, and he knew better than to ignore such a warning. Ryan had managed, during their time with the family, to build up an accurate plan of the house in his mind. Both Christy and Dean had helped him, taking him on a repeated tour of the first three floors, telling him where all the doors and barred windows and sets of stairs were, and who was in each room. He eased himself into the corridor, his head turning, alert for any noise. A full set of armor was just to his left, and he reached out to touch the cold metal of the breastplate. To his right hung a large portrait of a stern-faced man. Doc had described it to him, saying he thought it was by an inferior Dutch artist called Van Helsing. Ryan began to stalk along the passage, unconsciously closing his good eye as if he were making himself blind, and was that way kind of controlling his own destiny. There was a long bench seat next, and he rounded it, barely brushing its surface with the tips of his fingers. The room where Mildred and JB slept was on his right. Jack was opposite, and Dean immediately beyond that. Ryan hesitated, fixing his position in his mind. A bathroom was to the right, its brass handle cool against his hand. Then there was a staircase that JB believed led up to the banned top floor of the rambling mansion, but it was kept locked. Ryan froze, putting out his arm to steady himself, feeling the carved wood of the heavy staircase door, just as it had been described to him, with one exception.
Whoa.
It moved at his touch, swinging away from Ryan, taking him so much by surprise that he nearly fell. For a moment, Ryan had an odd thought. He knew that he was near the attics and lofts of the building, yet the wave of air smelled as though it came from deep underground, scented by the buried roots of old trees. He stood statue still, his hand on the butt of the Sig Sauer, waiting. The faint noise came from somewhere ahead of him. Johannes Ford's room was last along there, filled with all his movie equipment, which he'd insisted on having carried from the stabled wag. Beyond that was a heavily barred window covered with an ornamental tapestry. There was a draft from the opposite side of the passage, where Ryan remembered there was a fireplace that Christy had said looked like it had been sealed off and hadn't had a fire in it for 100 years. That might have been right, but the chimney had to still be open. The cold night wind surging down it was very strong, ruffling at Ryan's dark curly hair. He hesitated once more, concentrating his attention on making sure where he was. One more door to a supposedly empty room. Then came the final bedroom, with Ford sleeping in it. If there was any nocturnal danger in the house, it would be in either